Okay, hello and welcome to the show. How are you guys, Neil, Gwen?
I'm amazing. I'm really excited. It's going to be awesome. How
are
you?
Super duper excited, slightly nervous. I've managed to fix my camera since the trailer because in the trailer, you two guys are both full screen brilliant. And I was sort of sitting in the background, this tiny little shell with this wall behind me. So I've adjusted myself. So hopefully I'm more visible now.
You're very central and looking great. I'm equally well. Thank you very much. So a little introduction to the show, of course. It's Tech Team Weekly with me, Sanjeev Swani, Neil Studd, Gwen Diagram. Coming up for you today, we've got a fun little section we're going to start off with called the stand-up. Then we're going to go into a section called social engineering, where we're going to give you some, we're going to talk about the feedback and comments on social media and do our little building in public section. So we're going to be talking about how everything's going behind the scenes. We've got this week's epic. We couldn't pick, so we've got two epics this week. We've got the sort of new normal, and we've got Neil covering GitHub's Copilot and what is it? A cloud code? Is that what it's called?
Code spaces.
That's right. Well, you're going to tell us all about it. We've got a news wrap up, and then we've got the wash up at the very end.
Tech Team Weekly.
It's Tech Team Weekly.
Great timing, Neil.
At least you tried it.
I think that was
at least you didn't make us seem like a barbershop quartet.
No. Could you imagine us as an a cappella group one day? Maybe we could release a single.
Oh my god, that would be hilarious.
What's your singing voice like, Gwen?
I'm actually a singer. However, more shouting. Yeah. So I've been in a lot of bands, but it's not singing in the typical sense.
Like heavy metal stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Hardcore punk, but also a bit of indie stuff. A lot of kind of hardcore punk stuff. Yeah.
Okay, well, this is going to be fun to discover because I know Neil very well, and I don't know you very well, Gwen, but we're gonna change that, aren't we?
Definitely.
My singing is sadly karaoke grade.
you've got a lovely sound setup behind you.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not going to anything that can auto-tune me, unfortunately.
Okay, we'll see.
I love a bit of auto-tune.
Christmas single, I can see it now. Number one in the charts.
The stand-up.
So for those of you who don't know me, my name's Neil Studd. I work as a software development engineer in test for Postman. So a development engineer in test basically means quality focused, but writing code to do it. So it's a lot of automation, a lot of generally being closer to the code than maybe the typical tester might be. And one of the challenges of working for a company as large as Postman, which is a massive API development and collaboration platform that's used by something like 18 million users around the world now, it means I'm working on a lot of stuff that is secret and I can't really talk about. So one of the reoccurring themes of this section is going to be me saying, I'm working on some stuff that's coming soon, but I can't say when and I can't talk about it. But there's a lot of that going on, which means a lot of time, we have quite a lot of cross-team collaboration already because we have squads that work on tiny little elements of the project, of the product, but all areas of the product overlap anyway. But there's more of that collaboration than normal. And we're in a weird position where we keep finding that we're a blocker to other teams' progress because they're expecting us to do some work that we didn't know existed. So there's a lot of sort of synchronizing timelines, lots of very, I wouldn't say waterfall-y stuff, but lots of like Gantt charts and this needs to happen before this can happen. So there's more of that than normal, which is a challenge, particularly when our two main development offices are in, one of them is in Bangalore and one of them's in San Francisco. And those two offices are 12 hours apart, time zone wise. So it's quite difficult to have collaboration between those sites. It works quite well for me in the UK because I sit in the middle. So it's, you know, I can talk quite easily between the two and I can ferry message between the two if needed. But there's a lot more sort of some communication challenges there, let's say. The other big thing that I'm working on right now at Postman is we're running a regular series of webinars, training courses called Space Camp. And I've been asked to do one of the testing space camp sessions, which is in the middle of September. I'm gaining a appreciation for how much work goes into a training session. It's only like a 1 hour webinar. And I've seen some of the others and they make it look like a breeze, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes to make sure that you're building something that's explicable, that can be followed along, that people can pick up later if they're not watching it live. We're getting there. I think most of the material is now finalized. We're just down to doing like dry runs to make sure the material is paced well enough and there's not too much in there. But yeah, everything keeping me pretty busy. I've also launched a new podcast this week. It's called Tech Team Weekly. That's kept me pretty busy. Okay. What about you, Gwen?
So I'm really interested in what the culture is like between the two different offices, because Bangalore, the culture there must be so different to San Francisco. Like, is it really different working with like different countries?
It's quite good in that it means that the team is very good at things like remote communication, which means that when people who are working remotely come in, it's not a massive culture shock because, you know, we see everybody on camera. And I guess in many ways, I mean, there are cultural differences. One of the big things, obviously, is that you see a lot of the team in India, you see them in what is effectively their evening, whereas you see a lot of the Americans in what is their morning, which means that when you have all hands meetings for the company, no one knows how to start it. They're all sort of like, oh, good morning, evening. Something, hello. Everyone works really well. And people, they work very flexibly in such a way that, you know, sometimes the Bangalore team will work later in the day and they'll start later in the day because it gives them more chance to overlap with the American team and so on. But yeah, it works really well.
That's awesome. I love working with loads of different cultures. It's so interesting how different people interact. Love it. Cool. So my name's Gwen Diagram. I'm an engineering manager. I'm principal engineering manager at a little company called Glean, which is based in Leeds in the UK, where we work to make software for people to be able to learn better. So it's kind of recording and note-taking software. I love it. It's really good. We've got a real focus on quality, which makes me so happy. So lots of test writing and everything. So what do? I do a lot of running ceremonies. I do a fair bit. I get to do development, which is just amazing. I get to do testing. I just do whatever the hell is needed. And it's exactly my kind of role. So what's going on at the moment? So Agile on the Beach is happening next week, which is so exciting. It's one of my absolute favorite conferences. I'm speaking remotely, but the conference is just going to be amazing. I'm speaking about satisfaction from abstraction. So talking about how to be happy in an engineering management role. So at work, I'm learning a hell of a lot about product at the moment. So I'm reading Escaping the Build Trap by Melissa Perry to learn more about like how I can support the product team at work, which is really interesting because I don't know much about product at all. It's so good when you find these pieces, where you find pieces of stuff at work that you just don't know very much about. And so, yeah, I don't know anything about product. I'm learning a lot. I joined my first product board this week to figure out what we can figure out what to build for the next coming up, which was just a great experience. So, yeah. And then I've started a book club at work, reading Managing Humans, which is by Rands, with all the other engineering managers, because we absolutely love a good book club at work. So we've read Team Topologies in the past, and the Unicorn Project as well in previous ones. And it's just such a good way to read tech books where you can all get together and discuss it afterwards. You learn so much more and getting different people's opinions because you all see things in a really particular way and getting other people's ideas on it helps a lot. So outside of work, I've been getting my bathroom redone and it's been really interesting because it takes so long. And I've made a point to not ask how long it's going to take because I'm like, everyone asks you at work, how long is this going to take? And no one bloody knows, do they? It's like the plumber is not a fucking wizard. Engineers are not wizards. We don't know when it's going to be done. So, yeah. And of course, there's been bugs. So there's been hardware that's been broken and stuff like that. So it's really interesting watching him run the whole project and relate it back to software development. Loved it.
Could you get him to t-shirt size it? Is that unreasonable?
Oh, probably. Like it's just been so interesting the things that pop up. Like, and you know, like people are like, oh, have you asked when it's gonna be done? And I'm like, no, because people ask you all the time at work, don't they? And it's like, well, I can give you an estimation, but it's going to be wrong. Like, yeah, a forecast, no commitment. So, yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to awesome. Seeing your bathroom burn down chart.
So what have you been up to, Sanj?
Thank you for asking. I am Sanjay Paswani. I am the engineer here. I guess I'm primarily into like front end and JavaScript. I was a permanent at Compare the Market. That was an awesome role. I love that place. I love the people I got to work with. Then I moved into contracting. That's very kind of you to say so. My last contract. My pleasure, Neil. You were the best. You made that place, buddy. You know, it was you. But no, it was a great place with a great culture and really nice people. It felt like a really villagey kind of vibe. But then, you know, we were doing like really amazing, like hardcore stuff, you know, and people we worked with, our colleagues, you know, went onto Facebook, Twitter, Amazon's, you know, they're doing startups and stuff. So it was a really great culture and a great time. And yeah, my last contract was at Sky, which was equally awesome. We were building Peacock TV, which is like big in the US. It's kind of entering UK and Europe now. And that was awesome. But then the sort of pandemic and the lockdowns hit. And at that point, I decided to take a career break. And, you know, I'm not that keen to go back into full-time employment yet. We'll see how bored I get. But I'm really enjoying putting out content and doing stuff like this. So that's kind of my focus right now. And feeding my gaming addiction, of course. And as Neil said, you know, we launched this little thing called Tech Team Weekly that you're listening or viewing right now. And, you know, that's taken up so much time and it's been so exciting and fun. But yeah, it's been a heck of a busy week for sure. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens this week, you know, what reaction we get from people after this drops. And yeah, continuing to refine, you know, and see where we go from here.
Yeah, blockers, I mean, the worst reaction would be no reaction, right? I think as long as we hear something, we know we're doing something right.
Exactly. It was terrible. That's great. We love to hear from you.
At least you watched it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for watching. Please hit that like and subscribe.
So I worked at Sky as well. I was there for a couple of years. I absolutely love Sky. Really, really nice place. And I really liked the focus on diversity and especially LGBT stuff. And like, it was cool.
Social engineering.
Have you both had the problem where when you click into the tweet on Tech Team Weekly, it says this tweet is unavailable?
Unavailable? Yes, thank you.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on there?
It has happened to me. I don't know. I don't know. I went through all the Twitter help things, and it's looks like sometimes they will block or hide tweets. Like if they detect it's like a spam thing. I think because we just created a new account, we added ourselves, like all three of us, we added as team members of that account, and then we started sharing it, and then we started inviting people to follow us and things. Maybe they just thought it was spam, but it doesn't seem to help people back. I don't know whether it's just us that's affected or whether anyone else has seen it, but yeah, it's weird.
It's really interesting.
Sorry to interrupt. Was that our tweet that's unavailable, or like a reply to our tweet that was unavailable?
No, it's our tweet.
Oh.
So it means that I can't tweet, see like, who
where it appears
it.
On our timelines. Yeah.
It means I can't see who retweeted it.
It's still up, but yeah.
I guess we'll have to become more reputable.
True.
Yeah.
Well, Twitter's been really interesting in that we can't actually see everyone who's retweeted us because it seems like it might have thought that we were a bot or something. So when I click into the tweet, it says it's unavailable. So I can't give a shout out to all the awesome people that retweeted our first tweet, but we really appreciate you retweeting it. And thank you so much for engaging. But what I can do is I can tell you who our first Twitter follower was, which was Sherry, which is joyfulgirl001. So shout out to Sherry. Thank you so much. And our first LinkedIn follower was Beryl Hockey, which is one of my friends from Big Change. So shout out, Beryl. Thank you so much. Lovely to hear from you. And yeah, keep following us. We'll be posting stuff. And yeah, also... engage with us so we can give you a shout out and we can tell you stories, which we'll be hearing a few of later. So yeah, thank you. So
a lot of people have been resharing our stuff, which, you know, really, it's like so exciting. And, you know, we're so grateful. Thank you so much.
Very grateful.
It's something that I always try to do for other people because, yeah, it's such a little action, just like, just forward it on or do a retweet. But the impact of that personally can be huge. I mean, if you can retweet something mm-hmm. in 2 seconds and then suddenly it gets us 3 more followers at this stage, that is huge, particularly when, you know, we're trying to get those numbers up.
Yeah, we've got our podcast driven development. Have you copyrighted this, Neil? Do I have to pay you a royalty for using that phrase?
I think PDD should become a thing. I don't think it's been registered yet. It's still available should we want it. It was actually one of the many, many names that was originally considered for the podcast when we were going through them.
Yeah, that's right. We started off with the stand up to begin with, if you remember that. And I think that's the idea we approached Neil Gwen with as well.
Yeah, it's on. It's unfortunate, isn't it? Everyone else has had the idea for the stand-up because it is such a good name.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was also podcast-driven development, wasn't there, Neil? Was there?
Yeah, there were a few others as well. There were, I came up with loads of really good puns where if you put the word tech into sentences instead of the word take, like let's tech turns. Okay, that was brilliant. I never thought of the word, but I'm happy with where we settled in the end. Oh, I do. I was great at dad jokes before I became a dad, and now it's just escalated now.
well, look, we can tell you what our numbers are right now. So LinkedIn, 55 followers and 895 views of our trailer. Twitter, 87 followers, 914 views of our trailer, and YouTube, 16 subscribers and 51 trailer views already. I mean, 16 subscribers. I think that's not bad for like day zero.
All of those YouTube numbers are really good, considering we basically haven't pushed the YouTube yet, because when we tweeted and LinkedIn posted the trailer, we embedded the trailer within those posts itself. So there was no redirect to YouTube. So that's
mm-hmm.
technically organic traffic that's either gone bounced through our website through techteamweekly.com and ended up on YouTube, or the YouTube algorithm has put it in front of people. And yeah, the fact that we've got 16 subscribers, that means people have actively found our YouTube channel, which we've not expressly actually mentioned yet. It's accessible through the website. No. Also, we'll put it in the show notes today in case you're hearing this on a podcast feed. But yeah, those are really strong numbers considering we've done nothing on YouTube.
Yeah. And I mean, I've got high hopes for where we can go, you know, at least in terms of, you know, the engagement we can get with people. But can I just take a moment to thank? So, you know, I think we had a pretty pretty punchy trailer there. We've got some pretty decent graphics and branding. And Gwen, you know, you found some awesome music for us as well, which is excellent. And I need to give a shout out to Kev for doing all of our design and branding for us. You know, thank you so much, Kev. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Kev. We appreciate it. Thank you.
This week's epic.
Earlier this month, Reuters reported that employees that choose to work from home could be paid less. Tech giants such as Google, Facebook, and Twitter, all based in Silicon Valley, have been experimenting with cutting pay by sometimes as much as 25%. For remote employees that live in less expensive areas, which was found out by a very handy work from home pay calculator that Google gave its employees. According to that calculator, an employee working an hour away from the New York office in Connecticut could get a cut, whereas an employee working from home an hour away from the office, but still in New York, would not get a pay cut at all. So, yeah. Kind of hardcore, but not all companies are doing this, however. So there's cool companies such as Zillow and Reddit. They've moved towards location agnostic pay models. So when companies were already paying a set wage, why would they decide to cut depending on where somebody lives? It just sounds really tired of the companies, because no one wants a pay cut when you've worked your bollocks off to get to that point. That's my story. So we're going to link some of the articles in the description so you can have a look more into it. But we will have a chat about it now. So what are your opinions? Do you believe that it's fair for workers to get a pay cut for living further from the office?
This is a tough one, isn't it? Because I mean, I guess businesses are saving money on not having to pay for office space, or maybe they've already paid for it and they just have space wasting away, you know. And I mean, I don't know. My feeling is like most businesses are trying to get people back into the office, you know, and they're trying to incentivize people to do that. And, you know, cutting your pay is one way of doing it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. How about you, Neil? Do you think it's fair?
Well, I think there's a couple of perspectives to consider here. You've got the ethical perspective and the legal perspective. So can you is the legal perspective, and should you is the ethical perspective. And can you? Well, if they're doing it, and we're talking about large companies here, I assume they can. Personally, my own experience is I know I've worked for a few companies where there are salary brackets in place, but those brackets bump up a little bit if you're in London. So there is like a London bonus effectively. If those people who are getting that London bonus are no longer in London, I could see why the company might choose to do it. But then, you know, if you're saving, I mean, I don't know how many employees some of these companies are talking about, but, you know, maybe you're saving some thousand a month. But how much are you losing when those people then choose to leave and you have to rehire and you have to bring someone else in and you have to give them a boost to get them to come and work at the office in the first place? It feels like the sort of savings that are going to be pushed around here are not enough to justify, you know, pissing off your most loyal employees. It's something that I would certainly avoid doing. Obviously, I should mention that, you know, I'm slightly biased here in that I have already chosen to leave my job for reasons such as this, because a company actually, well, MoneySuperMarket didn't want to cut my salary, but they certainly wanted me to go back in the office, which I wasn't prepared to do. And we'll talk about that a bit in the next section. But yeah, I think the thing here, the companies are thinking about their bottom line. Obviously, there are large amounts of money being thrown around on office rent. Again, whether the company should be trying to negotiate that down or sublet their space so that the savings can then be pushed back onto keeping employee salaries at the level they are now, I don't know.
But, you know, to an extent, there's always been location-based pay, right? Like, you know, if you're working in, you could be working for Sky in London or Sky in Leeds or Liverpool, wherever they are. And you're probably going to be getting paid more in London, aren't you? You know, there's always been a pay disparity here. And, you know, it's the same disparity in the US, right? You know, if you're in the Midwest, you're going to be making a lot less than someone on like the East and West Coast, right? And same thing with like contractors. Yeah. I mean, companies always
had a horrible experience with this when I was working for a company where we outsourced some of our work to a team in Eastern Europe who were a brilliant team and we got on really well with, but the company insisted on referring to them as our low cost center of excellence. It is like, they're great and they're cheap.
God, that's horrific.
Yeah,
that's
they would openly do that in like slide decks and stuff. It was insane.
Wow.
That's disgusting.
Because yeah, there's this trend here of like offshoring or nearshoring, as they call it, you know, work to like Eastern Europe because, you know, they speak English, they're very good at coding, and they're a fraction of the price, right?
I worked with Lithuanians at a previous company, and oh my God, it was so amazing. Like, I would like to work with more Eastern European teams because I love their culture and I love the women that I worked with. They were just like, yeah, so like, all right, let's get this done. Yeah, brilliant.
I think you're right. I've noticed that as well. There is actually more diversity out there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Loads more women. So there's loads more women that do tech at uni. So I was working with like more women than I was used to working with the Lithuanian team, and I loved it because I had more female friends to like do performance testing with and like really hardcore technical stuff, which I just loved because there weren't many other women testers that are where I was working. It had a very strong benefit for me. I worked at a company where they changed my role and they suggested that I took a pay cut so that in the future I could move up to the next level and get paid more. And it pissed me off. I was like, I will not be taking a pay cut. Why would you even suggest this? This is fucking offensive. And so, like, if someone's offered you a certain amount of pay, you don't expect them to take it away because you've based like a lot of your life on that. You know, like when when you get your money at the start of the month, you like section it up, and like, and taking that away, it's like, well, fuck, I can't save as much as I used to. And that's totally put my plan off and stuff like that. You don't expect to go down, you expect to go up, don't you? Mm-hmm. And there were some really interesting parts of that article as well. Someone had worked and they'd managed to get a promotion, and they'd worked really hard to get their promotion. And like, say it was a 10 grand promotion. And then by getting this cut, it was basically cutting off the promotion that they'd worked so hard for. It just, yeah, it's rude.
Should we had a lot of interaction with our audience on this one. Do we want to get into some of the listener comments?
Yeah. So we had a really awesome view from Matt Sagar, who is a recruiter. So Matt Sagar works for Western Union.
So Matt was caught in a hiring freeze upheaval when he was on a contract at the start of the pandemic, but it all managed to work out. As a recruiter, he said that Zoom is making it much easier for him to get candidates in front of people because, you know, you don't have to take time off work or make an excuse to leave the office. You know, you could just jump on a call and your current employer needn't be any the wiser. He'd certainly noticed that the market had some slowdown at the start of the first lockdown because candidates certainly became less risk or more risk averse. Less risk averse, more risk averse. The one that means they didn't want to take risks because obviously, you know, with uncertainty, you know, if you've got a job, you'd like to hold on to that. So there was a slowdown in the market, certainly. But he says that the market is up and running and booming again. It certainly is still a market that's short of candidates. So if people are looking, there are opportunities that are needing to be filled out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk of people moving around a lot more at the moment as well, because they don't want to work from home. They do want to work from home. Some people don't want to work from home, though, don't they? So Lee Rathbone has spoken about some of the challenges of hybrid working. So some people are still wanting to be 100% remote. And he's been going into the office, and it feels really weird to go into the office and then sit on Microsoft Teams all day, because you could do that at home. So it exacerbates pre-existing remote working problems. So example, in meetings, people are disadvantaged if they're dialed in remotely, which was a massive thing at the time. I was working hybrid before, and yeah, it's always really hard to be at the other end when everyone's in an office, like gelling together, and you're like, hello, I'm here.
Yeah. That's the worst feeling.
I've also been in the opposite position where I've been
alone. You feel like the loser.
I've had a really experience of being in the opposite position, where I've been the only person in my team in an office taking up an entire meeting room, sitting on a call with everyone else who's remote.
All those coffee and biscuits, all for you, Neil. Well, we had Beth leave us a nice racket message, and she tweeted us as well. So she did a survey into like a load of like testers in the QA space, and it seemed to be like really split down the middle. She said, you know, half really love the working from home and don't want to change that, and the other half like want to get into the office. You know, they want to be around people and like, you know, mingling and stuff.
Yeah, it's been really interesting because my office, you can go in, and yeah, it's really interesting. The people that really want to go in, and it depends a lot on your living situation a lot of the time. But if you live alone, you are definitely a lot more likely to want to go in. But I don't particularly want to, because I work with a tester right beside me. My partner's a tester. So it's like I still have testing like entertainment at home, and like I have another company I get to hear about and all this kind of stuff. But it depends on your ability to work in a closed space as well. I think he has more problems with me shouting rather than the other way around. I don't hear him at all.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to the world opening up a bit more, because as much as I enjoy working from home, which technically is what I'm doing now full time, I much prefer what you call remote working, which is you don't have to work from home. You could work from anywhere. So I used to love, I had a full-time remote role before the pandemic, and I used to love, you know, I could travel Europe and go and sit in a cafe somewhere in Europe for a week, and I could put the hours in and then, you know, explore the rest of the country during the night and things like that. And even right now, when 2 days a week, my son is at home rather than being in nursery, those 2 days are considerably harder to work because there are a lot more distractions. And I just, honestly, on those days, I wish I could just nip round to a cafe. I think we need to get the Delta variant a bit more under control before I'm just happy just lounging around random places. But for my own well-being, I still need to see people even though I'm remote.
I have a mini rant, which I won't get into. I mean, a lot of this is down to the fact that we as a society are not taking to masks very well. You know, a lot of people don't want to wear masks. But, you know, if you look in the East, like, you know, people are in very close proximity, you know, rubbing shoulders literally with each other. And, you know, the numbers are tiny compared to ours. I mean, it's like fraction of a fraction. But there, you know, there are serious mask mandates. You know, everyone has to be wearing a mask outside.
Yeah, I don't understand. I really love my masks. it's such a comfort thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have serious anxieties at the moment now that the UK football season has started again and they're allowing crowds back at full capacity. And I know it's outside where the risk is lower, but we're talking about, you know, twice a week sticking 40, 50,000 people just rubbing shoulder to shoulder. And like, you look at those going, No, things are still pretty serious, aren't they? And they've all got to get there on transport or whatever. And
I refuse to go inside places with people still. So if I go and visit my friends, we will sit outside or something like that. And I'm still not visiting my friends very much. I feel like I'm being really paranoid when I speak to some people, but I can't shake it. I'm just like, No, I will only sit outside. I'm too freaked out to go inside with people. Mm.
This week's epic
phrase that's entering our lexicon, the great resignation. So if you go back a couple of years, you know, so I was a contractor. Some of you may have experience in the contract market. There was the change with the IR35 rules. So right around the time that the pandemic and the lockdown hit, so did the change to the IR35 rules. And a lot of contractors lost their contracts and they were either going on breaks or taking permanent roles. And then we had the lockdowns hit. Junior hiring slows down majorly. The rest of all businesses slow down basically for a long, long time. It's only in the last 6 months or so that things have been recovering. Junior hiring is back up to where it is, and mid and senior hiring is going through the roof. You know, there's so much demand, and now we end up in a situation combined with all this like working from home and remote working and people reassessing their lives that we're entering a great resignation apparently. More people have resigned recently than ever before. I can read a couple of stats out. So there was a really great article in Wired called The Great Resignation is Here and No One is Prepared. They're saying the trend is worldwide. In the US, 4 million people quit their jobs in April, a 20-year high, followed by 10 million jobs being available at the end of June and not being filled. Microsoft says 41% of the global workforce is considering leaving their employer this year, which is nuts. In the UK, in May, Job Site Read had its highest number of monthly postings since 2008, which is nuts. And in August, another 255,000 roles went live on the site. You know, that's just here in the UK. I think that what's led up to this, and you know, I'm not the only one who thinks this is. You know, we kind of had all the niceties of like office life stripped away. We're all just sat at home. You know, there's no more like free breakfast and, you know, movie and popcorn morning. There's no, you know, let's go out for lunch and, you know, let's play ping pong in the afternoon and then let's go for drinks after work. You know, there's none of that. You're just sat there in your chair at home and you're just doing your bare bones job. You know, everything's stripped away and you're laid bare. And I guess for a lot of people that gives them, you know, a chance to reflect on what's going on, you know, and that is probably one of the main contributing factors which leads us to where we are now. So of course people are resigning, but most of them are looking for other roles or taking a little break. Like myself personally, I'm on a little career break, you know, it was a great opportunity to take it. But yeah, some people just may not choose to go back to work. And like I said, yeah, at the mid and especially the senior end of the market, you know, things are crazy. Like, you know, it's so easy to move and it's so frictionless. You know, like Neil said, there's no, you can do this, you can do your job. 10 seconds later, you're on an interview, on a call with someone. You know, you can leave your job on a Friday. They'll just deliver you a new laptop on the weekend. On Monday, you keep your same office and you start a new job, you know. Now, that's all like sort of peachy keen and stuff. But, you know, there's a couple of like big downsides here. One, you shouldn't maybe rush into leaving your job. You should think about it carefully. I don't want to give people the wrong sort of idea. You know, it doesn't mean go out and resign. Please don't. Have a good long, hard, solid think about this. And the thing I didn't kind of expect to come out of this, I was having a private conversation with a friend and a former colleague on LinkedIn, and we were discussing this topic, and I won't name them, but they kind of made me aware of the emotional impact of this, because they were like saying, you know, there's all this upheaval, all these people are leaving, and it's just sad times for the ones that are left behind, you know.
I've been really lucky where I am. I've worked there since like February last year, and we have not had a single person from engineering resign. Wow. At all. So, and I think, yeah, we obviously don't have table football tables and all that kind of stuff anymore, but we have a culture around, like, a lot of us are gamers. And so we all get together and play games. We've always got games going on. So there's Don't Starve Together. And at 4:30 on a Friday, it's like people get together. Cool. And play that. I don't play that. It sounds terrifying. So one of the other dudes at work said it's terrifying. So I'm like, okay, cool. Had a look at the images. Too scary for me. But we played like Shell Shockers and stuff like that. And yeah, we're not playing table football and all that kind of shit, but we've still got a really sweet culture. And yeah, like, you can still build a culture with like food and table football tables and all that kind of bollocks. You just need to think a bit differently and make sure that it's nice for everyone. And yeah, but you know, I've worked places where loads of your colleagues leave in the past, and it hurts because, you know, you love these people, like you love the people that you work with so much, don't you? And then it's like my really good friend's gone and I love them, and now I need to figure out how I can like work without them or whatever. It is really sad.
But I think, sorry to interrupt, Neil, very, very, very briefly. I think you kind of nail it there, Gwen. You've got a great environment to work in where they give you flexibility and freedom. You know, why would you want to leave, right?
Yeah.
I think the problem is with companies that are not providing that.
Totally.
Sorry, Neil.
Yeah, it was a huge challenge for me when I left my last role, because I won't get into numbers, but yeah, there were a steady stream of people leaving my last company, and it was noticeable, and it was getting to a point where, you know, every day someone was sending an email around or someone was summoning an all-hands meeting to mention a big change. And I only realized that I'd become conditioned to that actually last week at Postman, when suddenly there was a surprise all hands meeting and I was very panicky, and it was just like, oh no, we've secured a round of Series D funding and we've now got a $5 billion company valuation. I was like, all right, you could do these and have it be good news, because I've just been like Pavlovian response, like, oh god, what's going to happen now? But I want to echo what Sam said about being cautious about making change despite having done it myself. One of the most important things for anyone right now is security. And now some people may choose to stay because of security, or they may choose to leave their role because of security. And funnily enough, I mean, having left my last company now, I could talk about this, but I had a baby the day before the first lockdown in the UK. And obviously we had 9 months leading up to that. And I had a career plan in mind, which was going to be take paternity leave after the baby was born. And then I was going to look to move into contracting. Now, of course, 1 month after the baby was born, companies are hiring. The prospect of starting your own business or setting your own business up was not a particularly sturdy one. So I chose to, for security's sake, I stayed at Money Supermarket for perhaps a year more than I would have done otherwise, because it gave me security, because it gave me a working environment that I could work in, and because it allowed me to appreciate the things that matter to me. And I did discover that for me personally, remote working and that flexibility was hugely important to me, perhaps more so than before I had a child. But I needed that time, and that extra year was really helpful for me to understand what mattered most to me. So I didn't jump into going, actually, I'm going to leave anyway and do this. I thought, no, let's take stock. And I think it's fine to choose to leave somewhere as long as you're doing it for the reasons that are right for you.
So I actually started as a contractor at Glean because I decided that I was going to go contracting. I was like, right, I'm sick of this. I'm just going to go contracting for a while, and it'll be ace. Well, actually, I didn't want to go contracting. I wanted to not work. But then my CTO called me up and he was like, do you want a job? You can just do testing for a while. And Dell was like, that would be amazing. Only testing though. And then like he was like, can we have you as an engineering manager? I'm like, oh, I wanted to do testing, but fine. And then like the pandemic happened and 2 months into the job. And I was just like, I don't think I can stay contracting. They're not going to have me forever as a contractor. And this is really nice here. So I might as well just go permanent. But I definitely didn't want to go permanent. Like at the start, when I first took the job, then I was like, I mean, this is sensible. This is, what is it? This is comfort. This is security. This is security. Everyone needed a bit more security at the start of the pandemic, which is why people didn't consider changing roles. You know, why I didn't go out looking for another contract. I wasn't like, no, I want to do contracting. I was like, no, I feel safe here. I will stay.
Yeah. Well, good environments. Why would you leave, right?
Yeah, totally, totally.
On Twitter, we had Simon Pryor send us a message saying, I did consider moving roles at numerous times over the pandemic, as working for an airline during that time did prove to be challenging. Have stayed out due to fear of having to build network again when starting a new company, especially remotely, which is a really good point. I mean, that networking and building your sort of relationships in a company is so important, right? To have to start that all over again remotely seems like a very daunting task.
Yeah,
it's certainly not for everybody. I mean, you have to be able to put yourself out there, particularly within a company. I have been very, I don't know where the sentence is going. Let me just give you one more go. I've been very aware of that since I started at Postman, to the extent that I put myself out there. I took part in a company demo day the week I started, like day four with the company. I did a presentation to everyone who wanted to listen. And obviously I've got this training course coming up. So yeah, just making it so people know who you are when they can't see you and they can't just bump into you in a corridor.
I wonder how many people find it more comforting to be remote and interact with people this way anyway. So I absolutely love it. I spent from the age of 10 on IRC, like that was how I spent a lot of my time. So when Slack came around, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is my childhood. This is really what I'm used to. And this all just feels so natural to me. Like I could be Ready Player One-ing basically, and I would be like, I am fine. Like chuck me in like AI, not AI, what is it? A VR, and like interact with people. Couldn't give a shit. Like as long as I'm talking to people, and yeah, but I don't really care whether whether it's via text or via video.
Yeah, did you see the thing that Facebook launched recently? It's basically an excuse to try and sell more Oculus headsets, but they basically launched almost like a VR boardroom, so that if you're in a team having a presentation, you could stick on a headset and you'd be sitting in a virtual boardroom, and there's a screen on the side of the boardroom wall and people run their PowerPoints through that. It's like, yeah, okay, that's a very good way of selling dozens of headsets to companies with too much money, but it's a bit Ready Player One office version.
VR is awesome, though. You know, I think as soon as the hardware gets a little bit less cumbersome and expensive, you know, it's going to take off big time.
So AR is, I just love AR so much. Have either of you tried HoloLens?
No, but I've seen it.
Oh, I got to try it at a hell of a crazy conference called Pirate Summit quite a few years ago. And it's just so, so beautiful. And I would love for that to happen. I was waiting for Google Glass for years. I didn't upgrade my phone for years because I was like, I'm going to get Google Glass. It's going to be amazing. And then Google Glass didn't happen. Like, all the AR stuff takes so long. Going on a total tangent. I get excited by this.
I'm curious on the subject, what companies are going to be doing to attract people, you know, or what benefits they're going to give people, you know, all that nice stuff we used to get in the office. Now that we're working from home, what replaces it?
Certainly at Postman, we've got a load of things like fitness benefits. Like you get a purse of X hundred dollars a year that you could put on, for example, well-being or fitness equipment. My wife is desperately trying to get me to buy a Peloton. as much as like perks like that are interesting, that they don't replace the like when was getting the social elements of that. Like, you know, going for, I used to have, when was it, Compare the Market? Compare the Market was on like an industrial estate on the edge of Peterborough, and there was like a ring road around the industrial estate. At lunchtime, we used to, there was like five or six of us, like developers and testers, we'd just go for a walk around the block and just talk nonsense about nothing. We'd get some fresh air, we'd you know, you get some endorphins back in, you get yourself ready to take on the rest of the day. Whereas at the moment, you know, sometimes I sit down at the start of a day, and if it wasn't for needing the toilet, I might not get up all day. And I know we had a tweet from James, who was saying, as much as he enjoyed the work-life balance and being able to help out with his family, he did feel this was bad for his health, because, you know, you're just sitting there and you're just not getting any walks in.
Yeah, I do try and go out for a walk at lunchtime, because I've got a beautiful park like with a river next to me, but sometimes you don't and you get distracted. It's been a hell of a lot easier now the gyms have reopened up, because like if you book in a certain time at the gym, you have to go. And I find that really useful. But yeah, it is hard to get away during the day because you want to cook food as well. I've enjoyed the food cooking at lunch so much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, an hour isn't long enough. And it's amazing to think like having an hour before you'd go and pick up food and like do all this stuff, where an hour seems so short.
Yeah.
The best tip I've heard for anyone who, particularly people who are on their own, who wants to get into that more, is to create a fake commute for yourself. So like create a route around your neighborhood that you must walk before you then sit down at your desk at the beginning of the day. And when you finish at the end of the day, get up, take that walk again before you get back home again. Even though, you know, rather than just walking from the office to the living room, give yourself that time to, first of all, to have a walk and to get yourself back into the headspace of, no, that's work done for the day now, because there's always the danger that we'll just dip back into work because it's only in the room next door. And I think having that divide and also building exercise into it can be really, really helpful.
That is a great tip. The fake commute. I love that. I've not heard that before.
Have you done it, Neil?
I stole it from someone. It's been around so long, I now forget who it was.
Yeah. One of the women I work with, she does that. She always goes for a walk in the morning, and she lives next to a forest, and it's lovely for her and really helps her. I like messing around too much in the morning. Like, I'm really shocking. I'm like, on the morning, I have my coffee. I'm on the phone, like on my phone, reading all the news, going on Reddit, all that kind of stuff. I just have to absorb so much information to feel alive, I guess.
Plus one to that. So look, I'm conscious we're actually running out of time. So,
hey, remember when this was going to be a half hour podcast? Yeah.
I don't think we even got through the introduction in half an hour.
This week's epic. So I guess we should move on to our other main story this week, which is a lot of the goings on at GitHub. Recently, they've been testing the waters with two massive new product launches. Firstly, there's GitHub Copilot, which is described as an AI pair programmer. If you've not seen it, it offers inline code completion and will even write entire functions for you based on context clues that you provide it, like comments. It's still in a technical preview state at the moment, so you can't sign up until you get off their waitlist. But there are loads of videos of it in action on YouTube, and feedback has generally been that it's impressive, if somewhat flawed. This week, a research paper found that of nearly 1,700 code examples that its authors ran in Copilot, about 40% of Copilot suggestions contained inherent flaws or exploits which could leave an application open to attackers. On the slightly less contentious side is GitHub CodeSpaces, a cloud-based development environment supported by a browser-based version of VS Code, which seems like a natural next step following Microsoft's $7.5 billion acquisition of GitHub in 2018. CodeSpaces is currently free to try, at least until September the 10th, at which point there's going to be some minimum spends that come into play. As for the browser-based version of VS Code, the product team recently released a video revealing a little-known secret. If you press the dot key on your keyboard while you're in any GitHub repo, it will immediately open that repo for editing in VS Code. Guys, what are your experiences around these features?
So I've pressed dot. I was excited. and then I forgot about it and continued using VS Code. But I love VS Code, so it's really nice, especially for, it'll be really useful for like really small changes like PR feedback, where it's like, oh shit, like I made a small mistake there and stuff like that. So I need to get on it. It's well exciting. However, I haven't looked into GitHub Copilot too much, but the flaws or exploits sound pretty terrifying.
So Copilot, I mean, you know, I guess it's the first iteration of like AI assisted coding, right? And I saw an example where, you know, you could write a function like, you know, square this number, and it was clever enough to figure out you're going to, you know, pass it some arguments as numbers and you want it to be squared, you know, but then more complex stuff it can't do yet. The dot, pressing dot, I didn't know about. So I tried it this morning and it's awesome. You know, I love VS Code as well. You know, I couldn't quite figure out how to go from editing in VS Code in the browser to like making a commit or, you know, or managing a PR or something. I didn't quite reach that stage. But
does it have the terminal still? Like, I've not had a look. I should have a look. Like, I can't remember when I had a look. Does it have the terminal? Like,
I didn't see a terminal.
Interesting.
Maybe there's some other way of doing it. I'm not sure. But I mean, you know, the association with VS Code, thanks to Merritt on Twitter, who reminded us, or me at least, that this is all down to a Microsoft acquisition, right? Because they acquired GitHub a little while ago, yeah. And Microsoft, I mean, yeah, like as Merritt said to us on Twitter, they're really smashing it right now. And, you know, not that long ago, they were quite maligned. You know, people were very net negative on Microsoft. And, you know, over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, I guess, 10 years potentially, yeah, they've really turned that around, right?
I think they're really smart to be doing a lot of this under the GitHub brand name rather than the Microsoft name, because, you know, Microsoft have had some resistance in the past. I think that, you know, if you want to break into the cloud compute space, you do it with the GitHub name rather than the Microsoft name. I think that immediately gets you a larger percentage of the potential people if you want to become a competitor to AWS, for example. Yeah, it's really interesting. Whether that means they've paid $7.5 billion for a brand name, I don't know, but maybe, you know, the scale of figures we're working with here for enterprise organizations running in the cloud, that could be, you know, nothing.
I wonder how long it would be to feel confident not using VS Code like locally on your machine to just use it in the browser, because that would still scare me. Like, yeah.
But also, you know, people have their own custom extensions and stuff that they like to use, right? Your own kind of linting and so on, and formatting and code completion. They would have to consider quite a lot before it replaced your own VS Code installation, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's really interesting.
Interestingly, we're doing something very similar at Postman at the moment. We've recently launched a web-based, browser-based version of Postman, which basically has feature parity with the desktop app. And it's because the desktop app is built in Electron, so we can just port it straight across and it is the same user experience. So, yeah,
nice.
It's nice to be able to give people a choice. But, yeah, I do sometimes like the security of a desktop app, like feeling that it's under your control and, you know, the browser's not just going to die suddenly. I think that's the browser's fault rather than the product. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Postman started, though, wasn't it? Wasn't it originally
a Chrome extension originally, yeah. Mm-hmm. It went to desktop because there was some, I think it was something like CSRF issues around certain sites you just couldn't access through the browser. So you wanted a dedicated desktop app. But there's now actually a desktop agent that you can run that the web client can call out to. So those problems have gone away, which means it's heading back to the web again.
That's cool. Awesome. That's cool.
I love Postman. It's an awesome product.
Yeah, I remember the first time it was shown to me. And yeah, the tools that we used before that were just not half as shiny. And it was so exciting being like, oh my God, this makes life so much easier. Yeah, Postman fan club.
if anyone Postman is listening, apart from Neil, can you send us some swag, please? Me and Gwen will have like t-shirts and some coffee mugs, please. Thank you.
I could find some swag. We're going to get into giveaways and things for users in upcoming episodes for sure. Yeah, but
definitely.
Copilot. Yeah, I've sat and absorbed hours and hours of videos about this, so I'm happy to field questions if you were. I've seen enough of it in action.
I was going to ask you if you used it or tried it out yourself. and what the results were?
No, literally, if you go onto the website, there's a button to click to join the waiting list, which I did the day that they announced it, and I'm still not off the wait list. Now, maybe they're prioritizing people based on usage patterns, and I guess I'm not a super duper high usage GitHub person, which is a shame. I'd like to find a way past that wait list to actually start using it. But I've just been watching lots of demos instead. And for those who haven't seen it, basically, it replaces the part of your day-to-day job where you normally jump on Stack Overflow to solve a problem. Literally, because it's machine learning, it's done lots of training on public GitHub projects, I think also on Stack Overflow. And so if you type in something, you can actually bring up like a debug panel and see the many different suggestions that it might offer you. But there are questions around the legalities of where it's getting some of that data from. In one famous one recently, there's an infamous piece of code that John Carmack wrote for Quake 3 called the inverse square root function. It basically, he broke maths to solve a processing problem. And that turned up in a Copilot suggestion. And it's like, well, that's copyrighted code. Where have you got that from? And can you just give that to someone? And am I, as a user, if I come across that, am I allowed to just use it because Copilot told me to? And the boundaries that it's blurring here and where it's absorbing this data from are legally shaky, I think.
That's really interesting. Really interesting.
Thanks.
Snap. Yeah, well, I wonder how it will. I wonder what kind of effect it would have, like, if used over time, like how we code in general. And does it work for what languages? Does it work for?
I've seen it in C#, Python, JavaScript. I think pretty much anything.
Holy mackerel! Cobol.
I really want to get my hands on it.
Cobol.
I haven't seen any videos, but I've not gone looking for them. But it will do things like, it even does things like, it suggests comments that you might like to write. Like if you start writing a comment, it will offer to auto-complete that based on the language that it sees you writing. I saw one video where someone like wrote a line saying, you know, write a function to make me rich. And the next line it suggested was a comment saying write a function to make me poor. It's like, well, it's done some kind of linguistic processing, but it's not very useful. But I think in terms of the impact for development teams, I mentioned this when I was chatting to Sanj on the Ahead in Tech podcast. I think as a tester, it really scares me the prospect of a developer having some code that they haven't even written. So they come to do handover with you and you're saying, what does this piece of code do? And they're saying, I don't know, I just typed it in and the AI gave it to me. You know, the idea of assuming some code is tested because it came from somewhere, at least normally when you pull it in from Stack Overflow, we tend to do the due diligence and we read through the replies. We look at whether the best suggestion really is the best suggestion. But to just go tap, 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 code, as testers, I think that could make our lives very difficult in the near future.
How do people think? I wonder what people thought about autocomplete when it first came into IDEs and whether the feeling was pretty similar to this. So I remember, because I wanted to learn coding from like when I was 12, and my dad used to say like, oh, it's code monkey stuff, like it's really simple stuff and all this kind of stuff. And I can't remember if autocomplete was on back then, but I wonder if it's a similar thought. It would be interesting to hear from people that were around when autocomplete first came in to see if like the feeling was quite similar, because I don't know.
I mean, I think, well, they always say for developers when they're learning, never use autocomplete and never copy and paste, always type everything out fully by hand, right? So you build that muscle memory.
But yeah, it's the same as we've all got terrible at maths because we can now all just type a number into a calculator, or, you know, into a, you know, we don't need to do maths anymore. I've got an Alexa in front of me that if I need to do even relatively simple maths, you know, trying to calculate my salary, like what's 12 times X, I just ask her rather than doing it because it happens in a half a second.
So what is your calorie, Neil? 12 times a lot.
Bring us back around. No, 12 times not as much as I would like. Although it is my payday, my first postman payday today. So there's a bigger smile on my face than there might have been otherwise.
That's exciting.
I think we had way too much content. I mean, we've gone over an hour now. We're going to have to become better at tightening things up.
But yeah, I go on tangents as well. I mean, I get too excited.
We're gonna have to start doing Gwen's bathroom because we're that bad at estimates.
As a matter of fact, we are your bathroom today.
Thank you.
the wash up.
It was really interesting. This was our first one. And so we had far too much content because we thought we'd get through a lot more. But as it happens, we all get excited and we all talk too much, as always happens. I mean, how many stand-ups have you been in that were meant to be 15 minutes, but they go on for half an hour because you start talking about our trousers? Happens all the time. So, yeah, in conclusion, like, it, the great work from home, like, and how people are going to interact with the office is just so interesting. And we're just going to have to wait and see what plays out, I guess, and hope that people don't lose their cool waiting. And the GitHub changes, like, absolutely love GitHub changes. When they put in dark mode, it was so exciting. I think they're putting in loads of good changes at the moment. So well done, GitHub team. You're giving us stuff to talk about, and it's exciting and interesting. So, yeah.
And
so,
if you'd like to talk about it, then, yeah, you get... I was going to do a segue.
Do it!
And if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach us on our social medias. We're at Tech Team Weekly on basically everything. If you'd like to give feedback on the stories we've talked about today, we're also going to try and get into a routine where every Friday, we're going to let people know what we're talking about this week. So on Fridays, check out our socials and you'll see the topics we're going to be talking about this week, and you can get some comments in and maybe get on air like some other people have done this week. Yeah.
And of course, oh, sorry, Sanj.
No, please go ahead.
And yeah, please subscribe. We would, we just want to hear from you. And yeah, we're really excited to have you. So thanks so much for joining us. We really enjoy having you interact, and thank you for your ears.
Yes, thank you. Thank you all so much. See you next week.
Thank you all for giving us a chance to talk to each other. It's the perfect excuse we needed. And we hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye all.
Hey, right. Brilliant.
I'm going to hit... Do whatever button you need to press.
Yes. Is it hang up? Close browser window? Is that one now?